one hand up, one hand down, and create a little force field of energy. Unless you're opposed to having hands touching.
If somebody's got to move anyway, yeah. Then maybe they can fill in that hole.
Oh, okay. Sharing your energy and your love. And we'll bring our hands to our hearts and let's just chant Om to connect to the eternal vibration of creation. Breathe, breath in.
they just like,
yeah, they're
and like, they're, yeah. 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 I mean, like where I'm from, or a lot, you know, in the South, a lot of people, if they don't see other men there, they're yeah. not coming.
Yeah. Well, some men come because they want to date other women. Right? And they come for that reason. And it's like, oh, good. I knew some of those people in LA that came for dating, but they actually developed a great practice, and then they actually came for yoga.
Yeah.
You know, they were like, oh, now I realize I wasn't here for dating. You know, I was here to cultivate a practice. So, any way you come in, great. Helped you out. All right. So, today is classically Surya A and Surya B, which are the two sun salutations that are classical sun salutations. There's also one called classical Surya Namaskar, which is in the manual, you know, just to confuse it. Mm-hmm. And there's also Surya Namaskar C, and different variations that include lunges and things like, you've probably seen like chaturangas that pull you down on the floor and do like a snake-like cobra thing, right, and that. So there's variations. I'm going to be teaching A and B primarily today, so you get a flavor for those, and you do not have to practice them. If you just want to observe, it's totally fine. Some of these poses may not be poses that you normally practice, right? If you have a more gentle or restorative practice, so you don't have to do it all, right? We're not going to do vinyasas all day. That's not what this workshop is about. It's about learning the sequence, but also breaking down the poses, so that if this sequence doesn't feel good in your body, you can understand why it may not feel good in other people's body also. Because we want to know what the risks are and the contraindications of all the poses that we teach. So that when somebody comes into the room and they may not have that practice, we can guide them into something so that they don't feel like left out or like they're not enough or whatever, you know, whatever people think when they come into a class and it's not exactly for them, right? So we can give them all sorts of things to do. Okay? So that's fine.
Surya Namaskar.
Surya Namaskar. S-U-R-Y-A. Surya means sun. Namaskar. Nama means to bow. Namaskara usually means to greet, like with a ritual or to honor or to respect. So sun salutations were not developed for gym yoga. They were actually developed to create a ritual to bow and honor the earth and the sun. Specifically the sun. And why was that important? Well, in the Vedic times, which is thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, they were crops, right? Crops were their gold, right? Agriculture was it, right? It was like farming. And so they would go out in the morning and they would do their sun rituals to honor and respect the earth and the sun. And bow, it's literally bowing, you know, when you come with you're saluting the sun, and then you're bowing to the earth. And so that ritual really became more of a sequence, I would say, in the early 1900s, right, when people started to actually write things down and make them more, like, tangible. But we don't really know what exactly was practiced in the Vedic times, because it was so long ago, 5,000 plus years ago. So that's what it's for. There's also a Chandra Namaskar. Chandra means moon, mm-hmm. And so there's the solar one with the sun, and then there's a moon one reflecting the moon. And much like we were talking a little bit about our energy yesterday, we have the solar side, the masculine side, we have the feminine side, the cooling side. So that one is a more yin-like practice, which maybe you guys would be more interested in. I don't know Chandra Namaskar. I never practiced it. All the years I've been doing it, I just did sun salutation. So it's a practice that is practiced in some forms of yoga, and it's in the manual, so we can go over it too. And so that would be something that you might do at night. You can do sun salutations at night, but you would want to counter it with more cooling energy. So maybe doing like some shoulder stands or something that lays up against the wall to balance the energy. So it can be balancing. You can balance them out too. Typically, what do you think would be the benefits of a sun salutation practice? And if you don't know them yet, you may not know, but anyone who's practiced sun salutations, what do you think would be the benefit?
To heat up, to prepare for the deeper poses.
Exactly.
more masculine, action-oriented energy. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say circulation.
Yeah, circulation, for sure. That gets the heat moving. What about the
breath?
It's great for the breath, which goes with circulation, right? We're breathing in a very consistent, flowing-like manner. It turns on the heat within our own bodies, and it gets us regulated and also focused. Mm-hmm. When we're focused on our breathing, what's the result? You know? What happens when we focus on the breathing?
It balances us, energized and relaxed.
Yeah, both. It can do both.
That
right?
was going to be my question, because it's a designed for heating up and preparing. Does it still have a calming sense for the nervous system?
It can, yeah. So as you get more, I would say, advanced in your mm-hmm. practice, it becomes more of a calming one. Mm-hmm. But at first, it's pretty vigorous. Mm-hmm. Right? I remember like really panting and trying to catch up when I first started doing it. Like, oh my God, I'm sweating. Mm-hmm. And now when I do them, it's very fluid and mm-hmm. it's very calming to me. Mm-hmm. But it also does wake up my energy. I can feel it. Another benefit is the belly, the tummy. It helps with digestion, because when you're in some of these poses and you're working with your core, you're also palpitating and massaging your organs. So after a bunch of sun salutations, I'm ready to go to the bathroom. I'll just be honest, it helps to move my digestion. And that is one of the reasons why. Because there's a lot of, it's navel focused, solar focused. Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense.
Would it also be building stamina then?
Yeah.
Since so is a progression to the
absolutely. Absolutely.
Strengthening the whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And building muscles, right? Different muscle groups. And we can talk about those. I mean, I think that people, you know, Madonna arms, a lot of chaturanga.
Right.
Certain muscle groups. You can tell when people do vinyasa, if they do a heavy vinyasa practice, because mm-hmm. they get very developed in their pecs, certain, like their deltoids and stuff. Mm-hmm. From doing all of this when I was practicing the Ashtanga practice for many years, without a lot of body awareness, I was taught to kind of dip the shoulders forward. It's actually not really good for your body, mm-hmm. but when you do all those dipping forwards, you do get this muscle that's right here. Mm-hmm. And so the minute I walked into the teacher training, my teacher goes, "You practice Ashtanga, don't you?" And I went, "Yeah, why? How do you can tell?" She's like, "Your arms and your shoulders, I can't wait to fix your pose." And I was like, "Oh no!" And she was like, "She's the double dipper." She called them double dippers. Mm-hmm. It's always like doing this thing with my shoulders. It actually is really bad for your shoulder curl. Mm-hmm. So now I have a much more even chaturanga and proper alignment chaturanga. But yeah, so speaking of that, what do you think might be risks of doing something like Surya Namaskar?
Overuse,
yeah. You probably see this a lot in your practice, right?
Oh yeah, RSI. That's not right.
RSI is repetitive stress injuries, right? So where would you see those, you think?
Specifically in shoulders, uh-huh. because if you're doing a lot of planking and maneuvering yeah. chaturanga. And probably in the low back, if people aren't yeah. using their core properly.
That's right, exactly, yeah. And
yes.
Yeah. You see those all the time, where people come in and they're like, "Oh, God, I can't reach anything." So when you build those muscles in your forearms and your wrists, that's definitely a place where people get injured consistently. I've gone through that myself.
That's where I'm most curious, because it's mostly wrist to me.
That's where you feel it most of the time? Mm-hmm. And your forearms too? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
we'll watch that.
Too. It's really interesting, because I have clients who will have pain when they get in this position, and I recently had an injury that was giving me that pain that I've never had to deal with.
Yeah.
And finding that balance between, does that mean you're not supposed to use it, or does that mean moving through mm-hmm. and strengthening, and finding the range. And so the wrists are interesting that way, and what it brings up for us too.
Well, it's likely because you're doing overuse of something else. Like most people are using computers and mouses all day, so they were using it that way, mm-hmm. and then when they go to put it under actual sustained stretch or strength, mm-hmm. then it falls apart on them, because they haven't trained it for that. They've only done this.
That's right. Yeah. That's really interesting. I got what I call the mom wrist. It's like after you have a baby. and you're picking them up in all sorts of weird ways. Mm-hmm. That's how I got mine.
You're always holding them. Like
yeah,
this.
It's a weird thing.
And inflection.
You know, doing strange things. Yeah, mm-hmm. Inflection. So I also had pain shooting up my arm for about, 6 months or mm-hmm. something. It finally went away. I maintained a consistent practice, but I did take my breaks.
Yeah.
So that if it was too painful, I would just stop. I'm like, no, can't do it. You know, and I gave up back bends and things that put a little pressure on my hands. And, yeah.
So I would say along with that, then probably neck stuff because of you know using shoulders.
Yes.
People, especially women, tend to start incorporating neck muscles because their shoulder muscles aren't
strong
enough.
Not open.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
me too.
Yeah. That's your thing. So it's like people do this to compensate for they can't open their chest, and so they use their neck and they jut their neck out, and that does cause some injury and some pain, as well as computers, as well as phones. For like all day, like little chickens walking. So all those places: wrists, shoulders, neck for sure, lower back for sure, and I would say those are probably my main.
I went to a really gentle teacher's Flow and Restore, and just to see what it was like. I could handle it. And I noticed that it brought my awareness to my weaknesses very quickly, so that I knew that was probably not something I should be doing until I build strength in all those places, the core. And but it was helpful because she was gentle and it was slower.
Yeah.
And I was able to truly see, okay, I need work there. So it was kind of, this would be very helpful for me because it will help me gauge and. A measurable result.
Mm-hmm.
If
That's a great benefit, actually, that you brought that up, because that's how Ashtanga, the Mysore sequence, actually was. You would do a pose, and you would do that pose until you got that pose, and then you would do the next pose.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a sequential, right? Mm-hmm. And then once you've got that pose, you could go to the next pose, but you didn't practice the whole sequence. You practiced one pose at a time, and then if you didn't get that, you'd go back and you'd do it again. Until you got to a certain place, and they would stop you. They're like, you're not ready for the next pose yet. So that's how it was traditionally practiced in my sort of Ashtanga practice. And there's benefits to that, just like what you said. Okay, you're strong enough and open enough to do this, and that will prevent you from injury. But then, there's people in the West, like ourselves, who get really bored doing the same thing over and over again, because that's just not what we do, right? We like variety. And so we've been doing all the poses, even if we aren't quite ready for it, and that's where we get all the injuries from. And it's interesting. The sequence, the nice thing about a Surya A or Surya B is you can measure, how open am I getting? Because I'm doing the same thing all the time, right? And so there is a meditation about that, and there's also the results, orientation as well. So I like that you said that. That's really smart. Okay, so let's go to your manuals a little bit. I know you don't have one, but you can share with me if you'd like to. Or I'll teach from it, so you don't really need it, but I just want them to see where some of the stuff is in their manual. And then we'll see if there's any more little nuggets that I'm leaving out.
Do you want us still in the circle while we're opening
this? Yeah, we can go to our mats.
Cool. Yeah.
Show and tell. Show and tell is always fun.
This one.
It's a lunge.
Yes.
Oh, right before that.
There are two sections. One, they're actually almost exactly the same, but they're just like laid out differently, which is really interesting. This one's like a slideshow kind of overview. So they're almost exactly the same. So I'm just showing you where they are. Let me just make sure I got to most of it. Let's see. I'll read some little quotes because they're nice. The sun symbolizes spiritual consciousness. Surya Namaskar has been handed down from the enlightened sages of the Vedic age. The sun symbolizes spiritual consciousness, and in ancient times was worshipped on a daily basis. In yoga, the sun is represented by Pingala or Surya Nadi. So that's the pranic channel we were talking about. Surya Nadi is on the right side. It carries our life-giving, vital life force energy.
Nicole?
Yes.
Just like start on the right foot and like that.
Yeah, so I actually, I have a picture that I created for you guys. So when we do the nadis, so the Ida and the Pingala, they actually cross intersect around the chakras like this. And then they go through the sinus cavity and cross the hemispheres of the brain. But the idea is that the right side of the body is your solar side and the left is your moon side. But those energy channels do cross like a snake all the way around. And then they meet here at the third eye and they go to the opposite brain, right? So our left brain is our the left brain is our more logical, more linear, right, more masculine brain. And then the left side, the feminine, the right brain is the more creative, more, what are words I'm looking for? Creative, softer, nurturing,
intuitive.
Yeah.
Visual?
Visual. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mathematical left brain, right? So that's associated with those channels. Cool. Thanks for asking that or saying that. This I thought was interesting because I think we were talking about this yesterday. The origins of vinyasa yoga. Vinyasa, do you guys know what vinyasa means? You ever heard of the term vinyasa before? Yeah. Typically people will say it's marrying breath and movement. It's like the marriage of breath and movement, or linking breath and movement. What it also means is placing something in a special way, step by step. And so you are doing that in a sun salutation. You're placing very intentionally your body in different ways in order to cultivate an experience of linking your breath and your movement. So it can be said both. So in here they have that. Vinyasas are a progressive sequence that unfold with an inherent harmony. I like that Shiva Ray said that. Vinyasas are a marriage of breath and movement. Surya Namaskar and Chandra Namaskar are vinyasas, a particular series of postures with transitions accompanied by a phase of breath. Okay, yeah, inhales and exhales, right? Vinyasa yoga or vinyasa flow yoga, you know, and all these terms have changed over time. When I first started, it was Ashtanga flow yoga, and then it was Ashtanga flow, and then it was Vinyasa flow, and then it was Vinyasa. It was like, what are we teaching? Refers to a flowing, so now I call this class, the Friday class, I teach aligning flow, because I teach more alignment-based yoga, and so, you know, it's all the same stuff. Refers to a flowing sequence of poses coordinated with your breath. From a teaching perspective, vinyasa yoga is designed using methodologies for safe and effective sequencing to meet an intention. Like that, meeting an intention. You know, one of the reasons why we do Surya Namaskar is to set that intention of being in a sacred space, bringing us to presence, and then flowing with that sacred idea or thought or intention or prayer. So that's beautiful too, you know, to think of it. Yes, please.
All right, so just so I'm clear, because I'm learning new terminology that I used to know.
Yes.
So vinyasa advertises a kind of class that people expect where you're moving a lot,
yeah,
versus going from holding poses.
Yeah.
But also, wouldn't vinyasa in the greater sense mean any class that links movement,
yes,
and breath, and which is safely sequentially taking,
yes,
you where you need to go?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, but it's
great
being
question.
Used in the classroom to advertise a certain type of,
I know, and
class,
it's
right?
Kind of, it's difficult now because it's, everything's been so blended up that it's really hard. It's really based on the teacher. You know, it's like a vinyasa flow class could be taught by 10 different teachers and it would be 10 completely different classes.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So
right.
Cool. Yeah.
Depending on who they learn from, where they learned, right, how they learned. And so it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Like my style now, even though my background is Ashtanga, it's certainly not an Ashtanga class.
Yeah.
I hold poses, I make people sit in them, I work people with alignment. And then I flow them in between sometimes, you know, but it's not, I used to do like 5 A's, 5 B's, you know, very sequential thing. Now I'm like, I'll do 3 A's, and then I'll do a bunch of standing poses, and then I'll put B's in later,
mm-hmm,
and then I'll do, you know, and that depends also on who's in the room. If I see that some people aren't into vinyasas, and like, then I'll customize the class, I'll change it up, you know, because I want people to have a good experience.
Do people typically come to a vinyasa class though that are not into vinyasas?
Sometimes
yeah,
they don't know what they're getting into.
Yeah,
they're just like,
okay,
oh, I just saw something that worked with my time schedule.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, great, you know, hopefully you'll have a good time.
Yeah.
The style that I teach has some linking, and I always give permission. I'll be like, if those aren't working for you, don't do them. And my old teacher would like slap me on the wrist if I ever said that. He'd be like, what are you talking about? That's crazy. So that's just, you know, the way that it is now. People are coming from all sorts of walks of life and different backgrounds and different ages. It doesn't matter, right? So now it's just like, okay, we're going to teach to the room. And this is, you'll get more depth at that. You can't come with a set of rules in your own head and think that that's the only way you're going to teach. Because then the pregnant women will walk in the door, you know, someone will say, I can't, you know, I have a back injury, and you'll go, oh, okay, oh, I was going to do all twists, and now there's this big pregnant woman in the class. And it's like, no, I guess it. Or, all right, I'm going to teach twists, and I'm going to give her modifications that work for her so she doesn't have a crappy time, you know. So, you know, that's down the road. Have a plan. And then be prepared to maybe throw it out.
So you specify a line because it's not implied with vinyasa.
It's not always implied with vinyasa. That's
okay.
Why I call it a line. That's true.
Because
mm-hmm. There's a lot of fast and furious yoga out there now. Especially where I just moved here 9 months ago. I came from LA. It was like Santa Monica. Then it was just like, go, 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 bikinis, you know, like, you know, it's just that. And it's very fast, it's super dancey, super loud music, like, you know, and so that's a style. But that wasn't the way it was in all of the yoga studios. I taught in a different yoga studio where it was an older population, some people had injuries, there were all sorts of things going on, so I had to really adjust the way that I taught. And I actually really liked that, because personally, I had a lot of back injuries for yoga that I had to deal with. And I have to learn a lot, you know, a gift, really, in the end. So I know how to treat and how to put people in poses that is safe. You know, like you were saying, safe, yeah. It has to be safe. You don't want to be injuring people and having people walk out with all sorts of things. And I'll tell you something that really scared me is one time I had an older gentleman, and I don't know what his health issues were, but he would try to, you know, he would do all the vinyasas because he was, like, into it. But then one day, he left class and he had a heart attack.
Oh.
And, you know, he didn't blame me because I didn't know that he couldn't do that. But I would always say, God, you look like you're really pushing yourself. You might want to slow down. I say that to people anyway, because why are we pushing ourselves in yoga like we're running some sort of marathon? We're not.
Yoga's supposed to be done with ease, right?
Huh?
All of it's supposed to be done with ease.
With ease.
Yeah.
With grace. With breath. It really, the breath is the tool. So if I see someone who's like panting,
yeah,
I'm like, you know, slow down. What are you in a rush for? You know, mm-hmm. I say it nicer than that. But what are you doing?
Yeah.
This is like my mom talk. You know, my mom talk. It's not a work with training. you'd like to be in sync with your breath. Mm-hmm. That's the most optimal for your body, and it's what feels good for your body.
So but do you think as, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
As new teachers, and when we're putting together sequences, should we already have kind of in mind different modifications for each of those poses for in the event that so you're not, because I imagine like as a new teacher, it's very difficult to just,
it's a lot of work.
You know, throw something out the window and then try to come up with something else.
And that, so have a plan. Be prepared to throw some things out if you need to. Like don't, like really what I'm saying is don't be too attached
to it. Yeah.
But have it. Because you want it, in the beginning, you want to have an idea of where you're going. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're unprepared and you might, you know, say something, freak out. I mean, who knows, people. When I first started, I wrote all my sequences out by hand. And I just was like, I'm doing this. It's going like this. Because I also had to time it out, right? You get adept at that time. Mm-hmm. But at first, I'm type A. I'm a Virgo. I was like, how do you know which pose to do? I was like, do you time it at 201? You know, it's like, I really was like, I need to know. And teachers are like, what is it stressing? You're putting yourself out there. You know, I'm very organized. So to me, it's really like I let go a lot and just be like, whoa, okay, I can actually trust and let go and surrender. Whoa. Mm-hmm. You know? And that's been my work my whole life, is learning how to do that. And now I can say I can show up at these things and I don't have outlines and I teach and I don't worry about any of it. I don't put my sequences together. And, you know, I have a plan. Like, I'll have, like, a peak. And we'll do sequencing. I'm teaching sequencing for you guys. I'll have a plan of where I'm going. Like, oh, I want to get to this pose today. Because when you teach, you want to have, I don't want to get too far off the topic, but you want to have a peak idea. And that could be a concept, it could be a group of poses, it could be like back bends, right? The hardest back bend is going to be almost towards 45 minutes to 50 minutes into a class. And again, classes are getting shorter, so it depends how long it is. But typically, like a long time ago, they all were an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And so about 45 minutes in was when you started getting to the juice. Right? Now, most classes are an hour and 15 minutes. So you have to kind of back it in a little bit more because you want to leave, you know, at least a 5 to 10 minute shavasana, some cooling down poses, and I'm just kind of looking at the clock as if I'm in the class. And so it is still about 40 minutes, 45 minutes, maybe 50 minutes where you're doing the hardest poses because you've warmed them up really, really well. Starting on the star A, B is these warm peak bodies up, but also the strong standing poses, warrior two, triangle pose, standing balance poses. These kinds of poses are strengthening. They build muscle groups, specifically the legs, because when we start to do that, it's very grounding, it's earthy, it's like more yang energy. And then when you get all that power, core work, and stuff like that, then you're ready for some of the bigger poses, which might be a back bend or an inversion or an arm balance. Mm-hmm. You would not do that out of the gate. Mm-hmm. That would just wreck people. They'd be like, what are you doing? So you get to there, and then you have to cool them down. Because you don't want to walk out totally jacked in your nervous system. You're always about balance. And I'll tell you, out there in the world, which is probably why you're asking that question about vinyasa, there's a lot of people teaching like really fast flow with not a lot of mindfulness, and a lot of energy and a lot of standing poses, and then they'll give you like one forward fold and they'll be like shavasana. And you're like, what? That is not balancing. It's like all yang all the way until the last pose, basically. And then you're in shavasana like this. Catching up your breath. It's like, no, that is not yoga. And, you know, I don't want to sound judgmental because people do what they do, and honestly, there's a lot of people out there that love it. And I think the reason is because, look, we have limited amounts of money to spend on some of these things. And now, yoga studios and gyms are about the same cost. So a lot of people will choose one or the other. They don't have both. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, well, I can either go to the gym or I can go to yoga. And so with that, mesh became gym yoga and modified yoga for intense workout.
And it makes sense to some degree, but if you're going to do that every day, then I would highly suggest you balance your nervous system by also going to a yin, a restorative, a gentle, pretty consistently, so that you are balancing your body. I would say balance the body in every class, if possible. But if, let's say, you get into a studio like that, and that's just the way it is, and you're like, okay, well, I'll go with the mold for now, then encourage people. This week, since you did so much great exercise and really boosted your stamina and did all these great things, take some time for yourself and really, like, be mellow. You know, like, maybe go to a restorative class, mm-hmm. go into the water, take a hot chozu bath, do something calming mm-hmm. and relaxing. Because all that yang is what we're already doing in our day-to-day lives anyway. Yeah. Our nervous systems are overloaded as a whole culture. It's just true. It's like stress is the number one killer. And that is an outcome. Stress is an outcome. It's not a disease. It's an outcome of what? Running around like crazy people, right? So We do that to ourselves. It's not like it's, you know, and it's the number one thing that we suffer from. So it's interesting, right? It's a mental, emotional, physical imbalance. Yeah, exactly. So I just got to, sorry, I do digress a lot. So you got to like reel me back in because I don't want to get on my high horse about things. But these things are important too. But yeah, Candace.
Yeah, just what I'm hearing is the yoga philosophy is about that balance. And so you saying to your clients, like, slow it down, like, that's a part of the discipline.
Yes.
Which in our Western rajasic way of thinking and moving and go, 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 we call that weakness.
Right.
But it's actually a weakness to not be able to slow down and maintain balance and stay in it. And so, like, what you said earlier about building on one pose, that's the discipline that we lack.
Right.
Just to be able to stay with one thing and deal with the emotions and the frustration and all that comes up and find peace and then build on it, you know.
Yeah.
So that's
that's a great lens that you just gave us, because it is about discipline, and that's a big component of the Yoga Sutras. Tapas is discipline. It's one of the niyamas. It's one of the root things that we're to be studying about ourselves and how we discipline ourselves. Because we're in a culture that's super abundant, we're super lucky, right? At one end of the spectrum, it's like, wow, we've got everything in our fingertips. We've got more variety with every single thing that could be possibly imagined. And that's a benefit to some degree. And it keeps us completely unfocused, out of discipline, not really accountable, you know, all these other things too. So the yoga practice is about discipline. It's about restraining, if you will, some of our cravings,
right.
Which is like Buddhist, right? It's like we have so many graspings and cravings. So yeah, so maintaining balance, the middle path. I mean, the middle road. You know, it's just really where the balance is. It's the central nervous system, keeping the central nervous system healthy. Okay, that's our center. So yeah, good point. Great point. Patavi Joyce, the history, we didn't go over the history, I realized last night, it was like the history of yoga, and I didn't go over the history. This is all this philosophy. There's the Vedics, the Vedic times, and then the Upanishads. There's all these sacred texts, the Bhagavad Gita, the Hatha Yoga Pradipika. The Hatha Yoga Pradipika was like really in the early 1900s. That's when you start to hear names like Krishnamacharya who's considered the father of Western yoga. Okay. So Krishnamacharya, we put him like, let's say, up here in the triangle. He was up here. Krishnamacharya is early 1900s, bringing yoga to the West. He wanted yoga to come to the West. He was divinely guided and spiritually guided. The West needs some help. Let's bring that there. So he had two students that branched off. One was Patavi Joyce, and one was BKS Iyengar, and then one was actually Desika Char. So Patavi Joyce was the one that started Ashtanga Yoga, and BKS Iyengar started Iyengar Yoga. Those were really the only two forms of yoga, and I'm sorry,
Desikachar did Vini yoga, which is now like gentle yoga, restorative yoga. So there was that too. So Vini, Ashtanga, Iyengar. Ashtanga became really what is modern day vinyasa, because it was breath and movement linked together. It was pretty vigorous. I have a book, Ashtanga Yoga, that I was going to show you guys from this is David Swenson, that's right. David Swenson. This was kind of like the book that everyone used for a while they were learning yoga. If they were doing vinyasa, this is like jump backs and jump throughs. It was very gymnastic-y in some ways and very challenging, really challenging. And people would go to India and they would do the Mysore practice, like die hard Ashtangis would go to Mysore. And literally, Patabi Joyce would like stand on people's bodies. He had a ruler, he would hit people with sticks. I mean, he was very militant. And he was like, you do this, you know, like very militant. They all were. DKS Iyengar was also militant. His yoga is the straps and the blocks and the chairs and the bolsters and everything in order. So everything was completely aligned, because that's how he healed himself as a child when he was ill, was through yoga, through alignment-based yoga. And he was told he would like never walk or something crazy. Like he literally was like 96 years old, this man. He was very, very ill as a kid. They didn't even think he'd live past his teen years. So there's two very different styles. But those became alignment. The alignment started to merge then with vinyasa. And so now sometimes that's when you hear like alignment-based flow is a little bit of a Iyengar, because people were getting so injured in this style because people were trying to do it. And it's really, this style was built for young boys. It was built for young boys to burn off their energy. And they were still flexible little boys who could do this stuff, gymnastic-y stuff. Now try, you know, fitting a body that comes into yoga at 45 into some of these studies. It's just not going to happen unless you're like triple jointed or you've been working with the circuits. I mean, so you can do it, but you'd have to dedicate 6 hours a day probably to practice this, you know, like to really start to master some of these poses. It's quite difficult stuff. So I was going to show it to you because his body is incredible. This guy went over to India. There was a group, my original teacher was with him too. There were like six guys who went over to India and lived with Patabi Joyce. And they would go to his house, and Patabi would come out every morning, you know, beat them up and basically make them do all these poses. And my original teacher, all these guys did it in the proper way. And my teacher was like, screw this, he keeps stopping me at this one pose. I'm not doing this anymore. This is bullshit. I came here to India to kind of do three poses. And so he was like really angry and rebellious. And he went back to the United States and started what's called Fitz Yoga, which there's a lot of Fitz Yogas around the world now, but it was what he decided to do. So it was like his version. He took out some poses and added other ones in and mixed it up. He called it Ashtanga Vinyasa. So it's not this classical version, it's a different version, and he called it the Rocket Series. And it was very gymnastic-y.
Who is this?
His name was Larry Schultz, and it was called It's Yoga. And it was one of the first yoga students. This guy used to tour with the Grateful Dead in the 60s and teach them yoga. That was his job. And then he opened up a bunch of yoga studios, and he filled them because he was hysterically funny, and he was a total rebel. And he was like one of those people that's just like, do whatever the hell you want. Just never use a strap. Don't use props. Get against the wall. Do some handstands. It's like this crazy guy, right? But people loved him. You know, they wanted to be beat up, I guess. I don't know. I guess I did it. So I just didn't know any better. You know? I didn't know there was any other yoga. At that time, there really wasn't. There was Bikram. Oh, and Bikram. And then there's Bikram. There was Bikram yoga, and there was him. And that's all there was when I started.
Bikram kind of militant as well?
Bikram's very militant as well. He'll sit in his throne, you know, during his Bikram chantings, and also with a stick, and you do this, and he'll step on your back. You know, they all stepped on people's backs. And then they'd say, if you get injured, that's your fault, deal with it. And then they'd move on. And they would never, you know, take responsibility for people's bodies, because they just thought, well, they signed a waiver, and you're in, or you're out. Now we get sued, which is why they didn't get sued then, and they didn't take this. responsible, and now we would get sued, and now we all need liability insurance to teach. And you really, do you want to do that to people's bodies? No, you want to help people. So it's yoga's kind of gone through very many waves of ridiculousness, and now it's back to like, okay, what are we really doing here? You know, physical therapists have gotten into yoga, you know, people like yourself doing massage, people who really know anatomy and the body, incorporating Western knowledge and science with an ancient art form that didn't have science back behind it, just knew that it felt really good for people, right? So anyway, I digressed into the whole kind of history, but it's good to know where this stuff comes from, because people have a lot of belief systems about what yoga is, and it's really a mixed bag these days. And that can be fun too. Like, I don't want to discount, like, great, like, go to booty yoga, I've never been, and it sounds amazing. Like, I think it's dance and you shake your butt and you do your yoga, and it's like, all right, you know, have fun with it. But do what feels good for your body. End of story. Do what feels good, right? So there's in here, which I think is lovely, stick figures are your best friend. That's what I would say. There's a classical Surya Namaskar, and this is the first one. They're calling this classical Surya Namaskar. I never learned this as being classical. I learned Surya AMV as being classical, but this is the way that they're talking about it in their manual. So I'm down with that. You know, it's like whatever the lens is. Classical in this version is Tadasana, and then hands at the heart, Urdhva Hastasana, and then a back bend, which I definitely have seen. That's kind of more of a Bikram kind of style. And then a chair pose, so it's different. And then a forward fold, and then the half lift, and then a lunge, and then Vira 1, which is interesting. And then that kind of, I call it the snake, you know, it's like the dip down. You slide across your chest and you're in a little cobra, up dog to, well, that's weird, up dog to a low cobra, and then a down dog. I don't know, I've never practiced this. I'll just be really honest. I've never seen it before. So it's interesting that they call it classic. So I don't know classic from what version of yoga, but just know that that's there, and that's great. What you're going to see mostly is this one. Surya Namaskar A. So A and B. It starts with Tadasana, and I recognize that some of us don't know Sanskrit, so I'll let you know what people call them in classes too now with English. But Tadasana is mountain pose. Okay. Pranamasana, I actually had not seen that term until I opened this book, but they're saying Anjali Mudra or Prayer Mudra. They're calling it Pranamasana. Pranamasana, like maybe bowing to your breath.
So what's the one that's right above it? That's different than the one that they just described as classic.
Yeah, it's just another version. I think they're just showing you that there's different versions that have been created.
Okay.
There's also, you'll see a class that's on sort of CD as well. Was that one Chandra? That one might have been Chandra. No. It's saying class. Oh, I'm sorry. So this, I read this wrong. This asana overview is just showing you the different poses that are actually in the sequences. So you have an overview of what poses to learn. That's what it's doing. A category of poses. So if you know these poses, you can interchange them into the sequences. That's what it's showing you. Okay. So let's go to Surya Namaskar A. So you've got Tadasana, and then they have hands at the heart. That's not actually, usually it's hands at the heart first. Well, I've seen it both ways. Mm-hmm. I've seen it both ways. Then Urdhva Hastasana, arms come up. That's always an inhale. And they've got the breath here too, which is great. So Tadasana, exhale, hands at the heart. Inhale, arms up, Urdhva Hastasana. Exhale, Uttanasana, forward fold. So this is just arms above the head. That's what Urdhva Hastasana means. Upward facing arms.
That word
Urdhva is up.
Urdhva?
Urdhva,
yeah. Urdhva.
It's up, like upper dog is Urdhva.
Urdhva.
Upward, yeah. Upward.
Urdhva.
Hands, Asta's
hands. Hatasana.
Hastasana. Hasta. Let's repeat them. Let's all repeat them so we get to learn them. Alright? Tadasana.
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 Pranamasana. I doubt you'll ever say that.
Pranamasana.
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 It's Anjali Mudra. Anjali means fallen prayer. Anjali. It's a prayer.
Okay.
Urdhva means upward. Urdhva. Urdhva. Urdhva.
Urdhva.
Urdhva. Urdhva. I'm sorry. Urdhva Hastasana.
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 Urdhva Hastasana.
Hastasana.
Or arms up. Gaze towards the fingertips. Uttanasana.
Uttanasana.
Uttanasana. Uttanasana. That's a forward fold.
A forward fold.
Yeah. Ardha Uttanasana. Ardha.
Ardha.
Ardha. Ardha means half. Ardha. Half forward fold. Ardha Uttanasana. Chaturanga Dandasana.
Chaturanga
Dandasana. Chaturanga Dandasana.
Chaturanga Dandasana.
So Ardha Uttanasana is on an inhale.
Yes.
Pretty sure I've done that inhale up and then you hang down again on an exhale.
I know. I've noticed that people have added that in.
Is that
not? It's not traditional.
So
I don't know where that came from.
So you go from here, and then you go straight in.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I'll show you some of the modifications that people do now that are very typical in classes, just because people have adjusted over time certain things, because people don't necessarily jump back, and I'll teach you the breadth of that as well.
Okay.
That's a good question. So that's the four limb staff pose. So basically, it's like a plank, but you're just, your arms come down halfway, right? Bent elbows. And then inhale, Urdhva Mukha. Everybody gets this wrong in the beginning.
Mukha.
I'm just going to pronounce this. Urdhva Mukha Svanasana.
Svanasana.
Svanasana. Svanasana.
Svanasana.
I know it sounds weird, but it's not Shavasana. And a lot of people confuse it too. Svanasana. It's like if you were Swedish, I would imagine they say Sva. Svanasana.
Svanasana.
Okay, Urdhva. And so upward, right? Upward facing, Mukha. Svanasana. Upward facing, dog.
Mukha.
Mukha is facing.
Svanasana is dog?
Upward facing dog.
Yeah.
Svanasana. And then Adho Mukha Svanasana is downward facing dog. Adho Mukha Svanasana. When you start writing out sequences, these are all like abbreviated. You'll see things like UMS, AMS, upward facing dog. Or some people now just write up dog, down dog. Yeah, that's what we call them now, right? You hear that in most classes now. It's just up dog, I mean, we've slanged everything, down dog.
Yeah.
I say that. Yeah. Ardha Uttanasana.
Ardha Uttanasana.
Uttanasana. And you might be between the arms and back.
Uttanasana.
Say it again.
You met that forward fold at the end. It might be what you're talking about, but I know I'd have to see where you're doing it. Uttanasana. And then Urdhva Hastasana again. And then hands at the heart. I'm learning this one myself. Pranamasana. Pranamasana.
Pranamasana.
I've actually never heard anyone ever say that in my entire history of yoga, so I don't know where that came from.
Hands at your heart.
Hands at your heart or Anjali Mudra. The mudra is Anjali, and that's or namaste. some people say namaste or namaskar. Mm-hmm. Namaste and namaskar are actually the same thing. When you walk around in Nepal and places like, I've never been to India, but people do this all day. Oh, namaste, namaste. They're always bowing. Namaskar is to bow in reverence to. So it's that same idea. It's so beautiful. I'm like, oh, namaste. Like, great, we should be doing that here. So then when you go to Surya Namaskar B, the two poses technically that are added are chair pose, Utkatasana. Utkatasana. Utkatasana.
Utkatasana.
Utkatasana.
Utkatasana.
Utkatasana. Yeah, there's a Utkatasana.
Utkatasana.
Does that mean chair? It actually, people call it chair because it looks like a chair, but it's actually fierce, or some people have translated it to lightning bolt for us. So, fierce is the traditional translation. Fierce pose. But because it looks like a chair, it became chair pose. Everybody knows it as chair.
If you look at the stick figure, it does kind of look like
it looks like a chair.
Well, lightning bolt.
Oh, but it does look like a chair. To me, and it's quite a fierce pose, right? You're like really in your legs. It's like and then you add warrior one or Virabhadrasana. I like Virabhadrasana. Everyone say it. Virabhadrasana.
Virabhadrasana.
Virabhadrasana. Virabhadrasana. At first, you might need little name cards and just to practice. Virabhadrasana is warrior one. Some people in old Ashtanga called it warrior A, but most people call it one. Okay? So if you ever hear A, it's the first. There's only two. There's warrior one and warrior two, or warrior A, B, or B. Okay? So those are added. And then, of course, you're doing warrior one on both sides, and so you're hitting that twice. And then what they're missing, oh no, they're not. Okay, starting B, second side. Okay. No, I'm missing the chair pose. They're just doing both sides, side one and side two. Okay. We'll go over this because we'll do it. And then if you flip, there's half sun salutes. And these are nice because in a more beginner class or with more elderly students or people that have wrist injuries and they don't want to do all the chaturangas, they could do half sun salutes. Tadasana. Anjali Mudra, arms above the ears, Uttanasana, forward fold, half forward fold lift, folding in again, and then inhaling and coming up. They never have to go back to Chaturanga, they don't have to do Down Dog, right? So I use these sometimes to warm up for the sun salutations. I'll be like, all right, half, I'll say half A's. I see, we slang everything, right? I'm like, half Surya A's. Half Surya A's, you know, but it's half sun salute.
There's the half to the forward fold again, right?
Right, so yes. Yeah. So we have Tadasana, and so the heart in this one, arms up, exhale, forward fold, inhale, rise up halfway, exhale, release and fold, inhale, coming up, and exhale, and you can bring your hands back down. So this is what I wanted to show you also. In David Swenson's book, because it's kind of interesting, to see. Oh my god, the primary series is so insane. Wait till you guys see this. Alright. So it's nice to see it on bodies as well, in stick figures, but his body. But they have the counting practice in here. So it was traditionally taught by counting. And I don't even know all the Sanskrit. They have it in here as English, which is nice, but it was like all these Sanskrit names, and they would just count, and they wouldn't even give you necessarily the poses. They just go one, and then do the first pose, two, second pose, three, third pose, right? So I'll show you guys, just so you see the count. So Samasthiti, you might hear this in really traditional studies. Samasthiti means zero, or like equanimity, or like back to square one. It's like where you start. Samasthiti.
Where's that page?
This is in a book. You guys come around and see this if you want. Come around so you can see it. And the reason why it's interesting is because
It helps you with the breath control. So if you know that someone's counting. So someone's tiki. So he starts in mountain pose. And see, the Anjali isn't even in there. He just starts in mountain. One, arms go up. So by the time one is over, everybody's there, they would count two, and then they would go into the forward fold. Three, next pose, half lift. Four, jump back, chaturanga. Five, inhale, upward facing dog. Six, jump back to, or not jump back, but just go back to downward facing dog, and hold for five breaths. This does not happen in yoga classes anymore, I'm just letting you know. People have no patience for five breaths anymore. It's usually three. and sometimes in some classes I go to just one. Then they go to the next one. Seven. Right. Eight, forward fold, nine, and then back to Samas DTE.
I like the five breaths in the
seven. The five breaths are really nice. It's very nice. I practice with five count holds myself in my own practice. But I'm just letting you know it's typical out there in the university and not, so just so you know. It's just good to know. So people will hold this for like three, and then we'll go on, okay? This is Surya Namaskar B, same thing. So from CT, one, chair pose, two, forward fold, three, half lift, jump back, chaturanga, up dog, five, back to down dog, stepping forward with the right foot, back to chaturanga, upward dog, back to down dog, stepping with the left foot, chaturanga, up dog, down dog, half lift, forward fold, chair, Samas DTE, and this would be at the five count fold in down dog. Okay?
This is in your Ashtanga book, right?
This is the Ashtanga, this is like the classical. So check this out. This is their standing. Huh?
Is there a modification where instead of stepping from down dog into warrior, you stay on the ground?
Like in a lunge?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah, that modification? Is it in there?
I think they have it in here.
Oh, okay.
It's called Surya Namaskar C,
at the beginning.
But actually here, it looks like it's the classical, so maybe that's what that one was.
Where you stand the ground.
There's a lunge in here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so there's one on the ground. I think there's, you know, there's a lot of different variations. Some of them, they start here, they go up, they come down, they go half lift, they step the right foot back, they come into a lunge. This is where I think Dharma Mitra does this. Then they do this. Some will step forward right away and go to this. Modification goes straight to that. Some will go from the lunge here to then a chaturanga, lower down chaturanga. And then some of them will even come to like a low cobra. You know? So you're going to see a lot of different variations now. And then they would step the right foot forward, be back in the lunge, and then step up. Right, so those two exist, and they're considered either Surya Namaskar C's or like variations of Surya Namaskar A. And you can play around with them. You know, I had a lot of fun doing that for like mid-level classes, because if people aren't used to doing things like that with their back, then it's kind of fun to do like a lot of little lunges and get their hip flexors open, because up dog's a huge pose, right? And so once these are open, the hip flexors are open, it makes the back bends a lot easier. So those lunges really help. Mm-hmm. They help to open up the psoas and slow down the hip flexors.
So one called crescent, it's a very
crescent,
that knee down, yes, and then lift up.
And a lot of people will do the crescent poses before they even do the warrior ones now, because that helps. Because we're a sitting culture, so a lot of the stuff is to help this open up, right? Because we're constantly in hip flexion all day. Driving, walking, right? So like, to be in hip extension, we need that in efforts to get it to our Warrior One poses without feeling like you see a lot of this lately in Warrior One. I see that, like, oh, this is, they're so tight here. They can't get their legs straight because the hip flexors are really tight. So these poses, like Candace was saying, I like to even bend the knee because you get even more, but classically are done now before the bees because of that reason. So we've had to adjust and modify for our bodies. I just have to be even. One thing you learn if you're a teacher is like you're constantly doing it on one side, and then that's how you get really uneven and get injured also. So I have to just kind of stretch both sides. But yeah, so I wanted you to see this because this is kind of fun, but you're going to be like, what? Oh my God, it's just fun to look at. So the way that they used to do this, the classical Ashtanga sequence of vinyasa, this is where a lot of these poses come from that we see now in vinyasa classes. Padmasana, Padmasana, Uttita Trikonasana, triangle pose, right? You know some of these. Twisting triangle, side angle pose. These are the forward fold series, A, B, C, and D, different variations, right? I think probably most of us see this one a lot, right? Parasvottanasana, pyramid pose. You guys see that in classes? These are pretty common. Uttita Astas, the different variations, A and B, opening out. Look at this seat. Oh my God. Mine's like right here. This is like up here. That's so amazing.
How do you say that word?
Uttita.
Uttita.
Uttita. Yeah.
And the bottom word?
You do that Bikram. Yeah. Bikram does this one.
Mine looks just
how
like
you pronounce the word under it?
Padangasthasana. Padangasthasana is pada is foot. So hastasana, foot grab, finger grabbing foot, and forward fold. That's what these are. Padangasthasana. But uttita asta is your hand, arm extended to grab the foot. So it's a forward fold because you're in hip flexion. You're folding actually.
He's not folding.
This guy's body is amazing.
Where's the folding?
You're moving
the first
vertebra flexion. So then you've got these binds, chair pose, warrior one. So we've seen these poses, right? I'm just showing you where some of this stuff came from. Then you get into what they call the primary series. The primary series is a lot of forward folding. We don't see that anymore in vinyasa, very rarely. But that's the original way, was to start by really opening your hamstrings first. Mm-hmm. So, but a lot of people got injured too, because then they got overstretching their hamstrings, like too much.
Also, and then you're seeing the low back.
You're seeing low back injuries, SI joint problems, things like that. But they did do a lot of forward folds. And very little back bending in the initial primary series. So this is all pretty much forward folds, different versions of Jhana Shirsasana, a couple of twists. Look at this one. This is like some of these are like really deep, intense forward folds, and then like binds and all sorts of stuff. You'll see sometimes in classes more like the Jhana Shirsasana is at the end. Maybe sometimes these Marichyasana, the twists. You know, you might see these. You might on occasion see something like this, like a Bharat Mudrasana, maybe in a vinyasa class these days. But that's really it. You don't really see a lot of these anymore. You have to be really open. I mean, look at Kurmasana. He's got his whole upper body under his legs. I can't even do this with it's an SI joint, but and I'm not open right now, but so like intense, right? Like this tortoise pose is amazing. And then it goes into these lotuses, like a ton of hip openers, a lot of hip openers. You we see these in classes, Supta Padangusthasana, right? All these ones with the straps and stuff, we open out, like that's all part of this. That's where this stuff came from.
So you're saying usually this was in the beginning, but your taste it recommending now it goes towards the end?
What I mean is there's four series to Ashtanga, so it's the primary is the first sequence that you learn. Once you master that, you go to the second series, and then third series, and then the fourth series, and you do them all together, which is insane, because this is like
a long time.
60 poses. It's 2.5 hours for the primary practice, and then you add. So it goes sun salutations. So it starts here. They do five of these. That's the warm up. Then they go standing sequence. Then the primary series, which ends with always a finishing sequence. So this is a finishing sequence that everybody does. And it goes into back bends, forward folds, shoulder stands, a bunch of different kind of like lotus variations, headstand. They use headstand as a cooling posture, which is, it's really actually a heaving posture. But in this practice, by the time you get here, it feels pretty grounding. And then they get to lotus and then shavasana. So that's one practice.
And if you can't do any one of those positions, then you stay to just where you're at.
Yes.
So you could just be doing that sequence for 2 hours.
Yes.
Three movements.
Well, they
forward bending
over and over again.
Yeah.
And then once you hit the primary, then you add these poses, which is called the second series, which are intermediate. So you start to get into these things, which are all the back bends, Dhanurasana, Ustrasana. Now we do these things.
Yeah.
Right? We do these things now in Vinyasa. So that's why a lot of people are like, but I can do the back bends and I can do this thing, so why do I have to not do, I don't want to do all the other stuff. And I don't have 2.5 hours to practice. So now that's why you see people picking and choosing the easier ones that are more approachable and then mixing them up. So now we have, I teach camel pose, I teach Dhanurasana, I teach, crow pose. Some of these, I don't teach all of these. I teach Pinchamayurasana, peacock pose, I teach headstands, so not all of these, but I teach basic headstands, right? So I'm just showing you this so you kind of have an idea of like, where did all this stuff come from? And now it's like, people are just like, switching it all around and doing whatever they want. As long as it feels good, it makes sense. So you don't just kind of walk into a room and go, oh, I'm just going to pick like 20 poses and it's going to be totally random. You want to have a peak pose, and then from that peak, see what components of the peak pose are warming my muscle groups up based on that pose.
So like if I'm going to do this back bend,
then I would do a lot of preparatory poses for back bending,
okay,
like Bhujangasana, Cobra pose, up pose. I would do a lot of shoulder openers.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably do a lot of core. Because if you have a strong core, your back bends are going to be much better and much safer too.
Okay.
And twisting. Twisting opens up the thoracic ribcage area, and that is really important for back bending. So, really all body parts. But specifically, you could take a back bending class and just focus on legs if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But most back bending classes are going to be around the upper body, opening the upper body, because that's where most people are the tightest. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk a lot more about that. I know we've got Anne in here. Anne's like, I'm not teaching, I'm not a teacher training, I'm not learning about the sun salutation. So we'll do that too. But it's interesting to know, because that's where all this stuff comes from. So that's kind of the history. It's like, where did all this sun salutes come from? Now you've got a general idea of that.
And if we have a sense of what each of those poses is getting at, then we can come to our own understanding of what a good modification would be, rather than trying to take the class into that, right?
Yeah.
And then bolster whatever is needed to
get to that. So what we'll do today is we'll look at the sun salutes and we'll break down some of the poses and give some modifications just so you have those, in your back pocket for people who do want to maybe attempt it or try it or modify it. They're approachable if you can do that. I definitely teach some salutations to beginners.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of ways to do it. Okay. Mm-hmm. You want to take a little break before we get into it? Because I'd like to come back and just like practice a little bit, and then this is called